Silence is golden, especially when it comes to brakes. That's why Napa Silent Guard are built to be one of the smoothest and most quiet brakes on the market. Made with fiber-reinforced shims that eliminate noise for the life of the pad, rubber-coated hardware for a better fit, and quality design that meets and exceeds OE performance. Silent Guard brakes deliver the stopping power drivers demand. Available now at Napa locations nationwide.
It was a season that saw seeds planted by a legend bloom on the biggest stage possible.
I still think of 2004 as part of the healing from 2001.
This has got to be the greatest day of my life.
A season that brought out the best.
We're right in the middle of this championship, so we'll just see what happens at Homestead.
And the worst.
And now they're tackling one another and a fight is on in the pit area.
While crowning a champion in the most suspenseful way.
We dodged a huge, huge, devastating proposition that would have taken us out of this championship.
A racing season that was one of the most impactful in the sport's history.
There's so much going on behind the scenes in 04, but the headlines that made the sport continue, I think will be 25 years from now when we're celebrating the 100th, somebody will look at a yardstick of our history and that'll 2004 is going to be on there.
Motor Racing Network welcomes you to NASCAR Live Presents 2004, Chasing History. Hello, everybody. I'm Mike Bagley, and welcome to Episode 7 of NASCAR Live Presents 2004, Chasing History. In Episode 6, we covered the close to the 2004 Nextel Cup Series regular season, which concluded with Jeremy Mayfield claiming the final spot in the chase for the Nextel Cup with a win at Richmond. In this episode, we'll cover the first three races of the chase, a stretch that included an opening race triumph for Kurt Busch, a dominant run at the Monster Mile by Ryan Newman, and another afternoon at Talladega where the name Earnhardt was celebrating in victory lane, but an Earnhardt victory that came at a cost. Following Jeremy Mayfield's heroic effort to claim the 10th and final spot in the inaugural chase for the Nextel Cup, the 10-driver field was set. Dale Earnhardt Jr., Kurt Busch, Tony Stewart, Mark Martin, Ryan Newman, Jeff Gordon, Elliott Sadler, Jimmy Johnson, Jeremy Mayfield, and Matt Kenseth would all be the first drivers to embark upon the 10-week, 10-race chase for the championship. Evaluating the chase field, three of the 10 drivers in the chase hailed from Roush Racing, the most of all the teams involved. The trio of Busch, Martin, and Kenseth would each have each other, along with non-chase teammates Carl Edwards and Greg Biffle, to lean on. The amount of perceivably friendly faces provided Matt Kenseth with a quiet confidence heading into the chase.
The thing about Roush, especially then, I mean, anytime I was there, really, but I mean, we had really good crew chiefs, engineers. We had a lot of common sense, like just racing people that were all constantly working on stuff to make the cars faster. And when they all communicated really well together, they all worked together. And when you had five people kind of working on maybe different ideas, but then they would all talk to each other and all share everything and all combine them, like it made all the cars pretty fast. You know, it was a really fun, good group that was constantly innovating and really working how, in my opinion, teammates are supposed to work. But it was good to have all your teammates in there, but you also kind of needed to have a plan, and you still wanted to win. You wanted to be the one out of your organization to win. Obviously, if you can't, you want a teammate too. But, you know, first and foremost, you're always watching out for yourself.
Outside the Roush Racing walls, the competition in the chase would be fierce. Matt Kenseth's teammate Kurt Busch had his eyes on several drivers he knew would push him.
Yeah, it was all of Hendrick, all of Roush. You know, we had the internal battle of so many good dudes and teams racing against each other. And then with Dale Jr., you know, he was in the red Budweiser 8 car. And, you know, you felt like he was starting to find his way after his father passing and getting through a couple seasons. And he was hungry. He was definitely hungry that year. And that's who I saw. I saw Hendrick and Roush and Earnhardt. And over the weeks, you just try not to get eliminated by having a crazy, stupid race.
Busch was prepared for the competition ahead of him. From the start of the season, Busch and his team strategically mapped out where they would use their 7 allotted test sessions wisely. And Busch used the majority of those sessions at tracks that would be a part of the chase.
Back then, you could choose where you wanted to test. You had 7 test sessions as a top-tier team. Rookies got a little bit more. And so we saved 6 out of our 7 tests for the final 10 weeks. And so I wanted to push hard with the car and the team once September rolled around.
After a 26-race regular season, the chase for the Nextel Cup was finally set to begin in Loudoun, New Hampshire at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. The weekend's festivities were halted as weather washed out qualifying, which meant, again, that series points leader Jeff Gordon would sit on the pole and lead the field to the green flag in the opening race of the chase.
Again, there's a lot on the line. Yeah, they want to do well. They want to win if they can. They certainly want to finish up in the top 10 in this first race of the chase for the NASCAR Nextel Cup. But they also don't want to push it too far and get in trouble and stand a chance on getting knocked out early here today. It's about to open up here as the field comes working behind the pace car off turn number 4. Everybody here at New Hampshire on their feet awaiting the start of the Sylvania 300. The pace car hits the pit lane, and for the start of the Sylvania 300, here's Barney Hall.
Sold out crowd, ready to go. Green flag goes in the air, and the Sylvania 300 is underway. On the break as they go to turn number 1, it's going to be Jeff Gordon dropping out front all by himself as they head for turn 2.
That afternoon at New Hampshire would be highlighted by an issue for a trio of drivers in the chase. On lap 65, Tony Stewart and Jeremy Mayfield were involved in a wreck that would see both cars be sent to the garage early that afternoon.
Well, Mayfield and Biffle got into it first, Barney, and spun at the exit of turn number 2. Biffle spun down to the bottom of the racetrack. Looked like everybody was going to clear it, but Tony Stewart was boxed in a heavy pack of traffic, had nowhere to go, hit Biffle in the side, went straight on into the car, did heavy damage to the front end of the Home Depot Chevrolet. And you can see here at the bottom of turn number 2 where Tony Stewart came to rest, a big puddle of fluid underneath where that car had been as he knocked the radiator out of that car. Jeremy Mayfield sent stocked on the back straightaway with a shredded left rear tire, among other damage, and he'll need some assistance to get back to pit road.
Stewart would finish the day in the 39th position and 124 points behind series leaders, while Mayfield placed 35th and was in a 142-point hole. Later that day, engine problems cost Ryan Newman as he joined Stewart and Mayfield in the garage.
Engine problems for Ryan Newman, another championship contender going to the garage before the end of the race. Not exactly what they wanted as they pack up their pits and head into the garage.
While that threesome endured a rough afternoon at Loudoun, it was smooth sailing for Kurt Busch. Kurt, who was dominant on the way to a win at Loudoun earlier that summer, found himself to be the beneficiary of the lack of practice and qualifying as he utilized the same setup that he won with back in July. Busch would go on to lead 155 of the 300 laps and announce his championship intentions.
Final time now for Kurt Busch, looking to sweep the season at New Hampshire and make a major statement in the chase for the championship. Kurt Busch right on the bottom, off turn 2 for the final time.
Running unchallenged on the back straightaway. The driver of Kurt Busch down into turn number 3, into the corner for the final time, has some 20 car lengths between himself and Matt Kenseth, heading for the checkered flag.
Kurt Busch won here in July. He follows it up with a win here today in the Sylvania 300, scoring his 11th career NASCAR Nextel Cup Series victory.
Win number 1 in the chase for the Nextel Cup belongs to Kurt Busch. Congratulations. The long run was all you this afternoon.
This car was awesome, and thanks for all the fans for coming out today. It's an awesome show when you get to come up and back up a track that you run well at early in July. And for us to be able to do this, a lot had to fall into place. We had to take the car cover off and throw it back out on the track. It's an awesome show being able to do this with this team. Week 1 is in the books. We've got a lot of work ahead of us, and I know that it's going to be a strenuous run.
A lot of question marks entering today because there was limited practice this weekend. How much did having the same race car that you won with in July mean today?
It only helped our matters. Just being able to have the car all the way in qualifying trim on Friday, knowing that we needed to qualify better, having the graces of the good Lord to rain us out. I wish we could have qualified. That would have been a great show for the fans to see which cars would have been going which way throughout the race. But early on in the race, I saw the 24, the 20. It just seemed like all the guys in the top 10 were around us, were up front. Tough day, but we were able to come out on top.
Seventh in points entering today. You're tied in the chase for the Nextel Cup, leaving this afternoon. How does that change your perspective?
Well, I said it just sarcastically, thinking that we could have come out of here with the points lead. There's so much work ahead of us, and this was a great effort to be able to pull this car back the same way and not run it at Richmond. We wanted to run it last week, but this one wouldn't have held any more gas than last week. So last week's done. We're on to the chase, and we got week 2 coming up at Dover.
That win vaulted Busch to the top of the point standings, tying him with Dale Earnhardt Jr. and setting the team on the right path with 9 weeks to go in the chase.
It was amazing. Everything fell into place. I think all practice and qualifying got rained out, and we had to start the race on points. and we had to start the race with the previous race's setup the last time we were at Loudon, and that's when we won. So I was chomping at the bit. I'm like, this is all unfolding perfectly. Nobody's going to get practice, and we just had the last winning car here.
Earlier in the season, following a win at Bristol, Busch discussed his team's strategy to stay under the radar throughout the season. Well, after winning in week one of the chase, it would be difficult to hide from the field.
Our goal was consistency, stay under the radar, stay out of the news. And so that was our goal, was a team effort on the marketing side, the racing side. And that was my fourth full-time year. That's when you see a lot of big champions in all of sports find their way, because the game slows down or the racing slows down and you're able to digest it all. And Jimmy Fenning was definitely the key factor that was the father figure to get me in line.
2004 was the third full-time season. Kurt Busch and crew chief Jimmy Fenning worked together. Busch, he believes that without Fenning's Midwest sensibilities and leadership style, he would not have achieved the success he found in 04.
Yeah, Jimmy Fenning from the Midwest had that dry sense of humor, also very strong leadership skills, much like Robbie Reiser and Matt Kenseth. You know, that whole Wisconsin gang, that's one of the best things that I learned as I started to travel and go to all these different states, cities, and racetracks, is you learn people from different regions. And the Midwest has that dry sense of humor, that toughness, but also that big heart to take care of the situation or people. And Jimmy Fenning was a father figure to me. I looked up to him to help coach all of my imperfections and to make me a better driver. You know, if I had a crew chief that was my same age, it wouldn't have worked out as well.
Week two of the chase brought the series to Dover, Delaware, the Monster Mile in Dover International Speedway for the second time in 2004.
Pace truck on pit road. Field comes out of turn number four, still looking for the green flag. Now it goes in the air, and they come up to full speed. Jeremy Mayfield gets a good start. He'll pull out front all by himself as they scramble for second place back there between Brian Vickers and Ryan Newman. They go over to turn two.
Despite never leading, Matt Kenseth had a strong start to the chase, finishing second behind his teammate Kurt Busch at New Hampshire. Unfortunately for Matt, week two of the chase would spell a different kind of fortune for him as he experienced some trouble with his car coming to the entrance of pit road.
There's trouble down at turn number four. A car was coming down onto the pit lane. Marty, is that Matt Kenseth?
It is, yes.
Matt Kenseth has hit the barrier coming onto the entrance of pit road. Kenseth had fallen back a couple of spots. We were just talking about the problems. Adam Alexander.
Well, they were saying that the car was getting extremely tight, Joe. That's the reason they had slid back through the field four or five spots. Then, to make matters worse, he felt like he had a right front tire going down. So they were going to make an unscheduled stop, put on four fresh tires, and then send him back out on the racetrack. But as you guys indicated, problems getting on the pit lane. A bad situation gone worse for Matt Kenseth, one of the contenders in the chase for the Nextel Cup. And already the crew starting to run back toward the Nextel Cup garage. So they're going to have their work cut out for them the remainder of this afternoon.
Matt Kenseth, who entered the day only 10 points behind the leaders, Earnhardt and Busch, would drop to 99 points below the tandem, leaving Dover. While Matt watched his positive start to the chase be undone, Ryan Newman was poised to correct the mistakes from the week earlier at New Hampshire. Newman paced the field for all but 75 of the 400 laps that day, including the final 135 to revive his championship hopes.
Ryan Newman heading up to turn four. He could have almost pulled off and had a hot dog and still beat him here this afternoon the way that car has run. Crosses the line. White flag goes out for Ryan Newman. He's heading for turn two.
For the final time, brings the car back to turns one and two, the north end here at Dover International Speedway. And to the back straightaway, he's not going to press the point, not going to try to put Ricky Rudd a lap down. Instead, preserve that racetrack, get the win, and dive back into turn three. Ryan Newman off turn four looking for the checkers.
Only a second win of the 2004 season here at Dover International Speedway is where it comes. Ryan Newman wins the MBNA America 400 and again gives him his second win of the year, his third win here at the Monster Mile.
Well, I tell you what, they don't call it Gatorade Victory Lane for nothing. He's been dumped Gatorade all on him three or four times from his team. I tell you what, makes you think about guys bringing a knife to a gunfight. Have you ever had that dominant of a race car, Ryan?
I don't know. I mean, I guess at some point in my life, in a 30 lapper I have, but not for 400 miles. Guys did an awesome job. You know, Matt had a really good car there at the first part, and Kurt kind of surprised me, but I don't think he was as good as he wanted to be on the long run. But, you know, just awesome day for our Alltel Dodge. Good to get our Alltel Dodge in victory lane, and Gatorade victory lane. I haven't been there since June. It sure feels good.
Did you guys make any chassis adjustments all day long? What were the handling characteristics?
We did make some, but we didn't have to make much. You know, usually here, because the track doesn't change much because it's concrete, once you get it right, you can pretty much keep it right. And I think a few guys caught up there, and we weren't as good as we could have been on that long green flag run. But I just want to thank all the fans for coming out. Great day today, and we look forward to Talladega for once.
While imperative to any championship aspirations Newman had, his bounce-back win at the Monster Mile would only do him so much, as he was still 107 points behind Kurt Busch and Dale Earnhardt Jr. heading into the third race of the Chase. Talladega Super Speedway set the stage for race three of the Chase for the NASCAR Nextel Cup. The race at Talladega would represent the only Super Speedway race to take part in the first year of the Chase. Talladega was also a symbol of how a good race day could go bad in an instant, heightening each Chase driver's awareness as the green flag flew underneath the Alabama sunshine.
188 laps around here, and you'll have to hold your breath. The biggest part of those, they come down to the line. Green flag goes in the air, and we are underway in the EA Sports 500.
And hold their breath they did. Trouble at Talladega is nearly inescapable. For the fortunate few that do, a trip to victory lane and your name etched as a winner at one of NASCAR's most hallowed grounds is within reach. For the rest, it's a trip to the garage and the hope for better luck on another day. On lap 144, coming out of the Alabama Gang Superstretch, Jeremy Mayfield was involved in a multi-car crash in turn three.
Trouble up in turn number four. One car spins. Jeremy Mayfield's involved. Green head-on into the concrete. Here comes Jeff Green's involved. Bobby Hamilton's collected as about four cars get collected off the end of the back straightaway.
Jeremy Mayfield, one of the drivers in the chase for the Nextel Cup, involved in a multi-car crash. In turn three, the caution flag waves for the fourth time. Back to Mike Bagley.
Problems for Jeff Green off the end of the back straightaway. Couldn't tell if he hit the apron, but anyway, he got turned and went head-on into the outside wall. The track in the upper quadrant there was blocked, and the cars began to collect. Jimmy Spencer, Jeremy Mayfield, Bobby Hamilton Jr., and others began to slide and slam into each other, and now they've all slid down the racetrack and now come to rest there between turns three and four.
For the second time in 3 weeks, Mayfield's day would end early, now sitting 267 behind the top of the chase field. His championship pursuit was all but over.
Well, we've caught up with Jeremy Mayfield. He still sits in his Dodge back here in the garage. Jeremy, was it just a victim of being in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Pretty much. You know, I'm not sure what happened to the 43. Somebody turning me, you know, turned right in front of us. But, you know, we're just kind of sticking to our game plan. That was either be up front or be in the back till the end and then, you know, give it all we got. And that's what we're doing. And what do? You know, you can't really predict what's going to happen here, you know, so we just try to fix our Dodge here and go out and make a few laps and get them, you know, a few more spots hopefully and gain some points and go home.
For much of the afternoon, Dale Earnhardt Jr. was the car to beat. Jeff Gordon learned just how difficult it would be to secure the top spot from Jr. as he battled him for the lead.
Nobody's going to cut any slack between here and the checkered flag this afternoon. They're all trying to stay with Dale Earnhardt Jr. as, again, he sweeps around on the outside here at the start-finish line. But look out for that bottom line. Jeff Gordon's got a good drafting help, about an eight-car choo-choo train going after him over in turn two.
And here comes the Jeff Gordon Express for the lead on the bottom of the racetrack. Puts a wheel to the inside. Jr.
Gordon and company pouring on the coals midway down the back straightaway. Earnhardt's trying to defend the draft now, zigging back and forth. That will work momentarily, but here comes Gordon charging up alongside Michael Waltrip for second.
And once again, Dale Jr., Michael Waltrip way up the banking in three and four, and that opens things up down low for Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart, Bobby Labonte. They're digging hard down low, trying to draw a bead on Dale Earnhardt Jr. They're wheel to wheel for the lead at Talladega.
Jimmy Johnson drops out of the draft. He's coming down the pit lane. Meanwhile, his teammate is going for the lead at the start-finish line. Nearly had it. He's right there, still up alongside Dale Earnhardt Jr. for the top spot.
Classic confrontation as they go wheel-to-wheel for the lead. Jeff Gordon on the inside. Dale Earnhardt Jr. on the outside. They'll look to go three wide around the slower car of Brian Vickers. They're dead even off turn two.
Jeff Gordon down low. Dale Earnhardt Jr. up high. Earnhardt with drafting help from his teammate Michael Waltrip. Drafting help for Gordon from Tony Stewart. Gordon's going to lose four spots as Earnhardt retakes the lead in three.
Michael Waltrip second. Matt Kenseth goes third. But here comes Jeff Gordon trying to rally back on the bottom. Drafting help in the form of Tony Stewart. But out front, it's the teammates from DEI, Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Michael Waltrip.
Jimmy Johnson had a quiet start to the chase. Johnson finished in the 10th spot at Dover, preceded by an 11th place finish at Loudoun. Johnson was squarely in the mix for a championship as he led 19 laps at Talladega. In the midst of Earnhardt Jr. and Gordon's battle for the lead, Jimmy Johnson pulled off the track into pit road for more fuel.
Jimmy Johnson was on pit road. Let's see if we can get a quick update there.
Well, he was running just a little bit warm, so they pulled some tape off of the front grill, topped it off with fuel, 4.43 seconds. He can go to the rest of the way on fuel.
Or so he thought.
Problems on Jimmy Johnson's car, more serious than they thought. They think they got some oil problems and engine problems. They're pushing it behind the wall, so one of the championship contenders going behind the wall.
Johnson became the latest of the drivers in the chase to bow out early due to mechanical problems. A setback at Talladega would drop Johnson down to the ninth position in the standings, 159 points outside of the championship. During his Hall of Fame career, Dale Earnhardt Sr. won at Talladega a record 10 times. Throughout the countless trips to Victory Lane, the Earnhardt name would be synonymous with the track. Tony Urie Jr. worked on Earnhardt Jr.'s pit crew that season and notes that while Jr. picked up the tricks of Talladega from his father, he was always willing to learn on his teammates.
But I'm telling you, Dale Jr. picked up a lot from his dad, from just paying attention and listening to the wind and doing different things. And I think there for a while, teammates always help you. There's no question about it. Michael and him, the combination they had. I mean, you see it with Brad and his teammate now. It's like Buescher. It's like those two take care of one another. And you have to, because you can't do it by yourself. And because we got to a point to where you're trying to do it by yourself. Well, if you don't have help, you can't protect yourself. You know, if you have a teammate, you can protect yourself and you can keep your cars up front, keep it out of all the mayhem. And then you can let your two guys decide it at the end.
Late in the Alabama afternoon, Dale Jr. continued to set the pace as the white flag flew, and he was one lap away from holding off a hard-charging Kevin Harvick with the full support of a raucous Talladega crowd behind him.
One lap to go, but they're chasing Dale Jr.
Kevin Harvick now is the man in second. Jr. right up next to the wall. The crowd absolutely losing its mind on the back chute. Here comes Jr. off turn two with a rear view full of Kevin Harvick.
One car into the wall off turn two. Greg Biffle gets turned. He'll collect one or two other machines halfway down the back straightaway as Dale Earnhardt Jr. leads Kevin Harvick by a car length back to three.
It's Chevrolet's up front. Kevin Harvick is trying to do everything he can to run down Junior. Junior runs the bottom. Harvick is right. Dale Jared trying to lend drafting help, but here comes the Budweiser Chevrolet. The crowd on their feet. Junior is headed for the checkers.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. trying to pick up the win at Talladega Super Speedway. Kevin Harvick doing all he can, and all he can do is fall in behind and follow the Budweiser Chevy across the line. Junior does it again, and at the line, Elliott Sadler flips completely over, lands back on all four tires, continues to roll along. Dale Earnhardt Jr. has won at Talladega.
Well, it's Gatorade Victory Lane, but it's also Budweiser Victory Lane as Dale Earnhardt Jr. getting a lot of the Budweiser flowing down here. Tell you what, I got to ask you first, when you restarted 14th, were you worried about being able to get back up to the front?
Yeah, I was. I didn't know whether we had what it took, but we put two tires on that caution and I drove right around them guys that had old tires on. And good call by Tony Jr. Great pit stops today, man. That thing come out first every time. Them fans down there in turn one was cheering like hell.
Tell us about those last 10 laps. Where you passed the guys, where was the car the strongest?
Well, I had the brand new rights on it, and it just drove around the corner so much better than old tires than other guys had. I knew the top was where it was at. I mean, we everybody had that figured out, and I just went up there and took every run I got until I didn't have nobody else to pass and just tried to do what I could to stay there.
How about that call to take on two tires? Tony Sr. said you guys had just a few seconds to make that call. Were you worried about that you came back further out?
No, I wasn't worried about it, man. They make the calls. I just drive the car. I drive it as hard as I can drive it. But, you know, if we didn't win, we didn't win. But I'm just glad to get back on top of Talladega, man. It's my place. Alabama, baby.
While Dale Earnhardt Jr. managed to keep his language clean during his Victory Lane interview with MRN, he was unable to do the same when on television with NBC. Earnhardt Jr.'s use of obscenity placed NASCAR in the uncomfortable position to make an example out of one of the sport's favored sons. Earlier in 04, NASCAR and several television products were on high alert following a wardrobe malfunction involving Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake during halftime of the Super Bowl. NASCAR made it clear to all of its drivers that obscene language and gestures would not be tolerated at all. Johnny Sauter, then a NASCAR Busch Series driver, learned the hard way as he faced a penalty. Unfortunately, for Dale Earnhardt Jr., he'd also have to face the same consequences of a 25-point penalty for his violation. Former NASCAR president Mike Helton discussed NASCAR's decision to penalize Junior.
So it was obvious at the end of the race what he said in victory lane. And any penalty we've got, I don't care if it's a crew chief, a driver, team owner, we don't want to do this. That's not what we're here for. We're not here to find issues to react to. We're here just to put the best, most level set of circumstances for everybody. And whether it was Sauter or Dale Jr. that crossed that line, didn't matter. It had to be. We said this is what we were obligated to enforce, and we said what we were going to do, so we have to say what we say we're going to do. And it wasn't fun. It wasn't easy. Next day I called Dale up and I said, Dale's the type of guy that takes a situation and doesn't fight back too much. He may not like it, and he'll tell you he don't like it, but he understands the responsibilities. And he didn't, the way he used it in victory lane, it was paying tribute to his father. It just happened to be one wrong word in a whole beautiful terminology he used in that respect.
The key beneficiary of Dale Jr.'s loss in points was Kurt Busch, who now sat alone atop the point standings, 12 points clear of Junior. How did Busch feel when he heard the news?
I was surprised, but I didn't want to emotionally get charged up by it or try to dig into the reason why it happened. I was surprised, but then just took it. All right. You know, that's like getting a foul called on you when you were in the paint, and now you got to go shoot some free throws or something, right? Just take it and roll.
While Kurt was largely unfazed by the news, the rest of the NASCAR world feared what impact this would have on the championship. Would the 25 points be the difference? According to Tony Urey Jr., Dale Jr. and the team weren't concerned about what they had lost that Talladega afternoon.
We didn't care less, honestly. We had T-shirts made up, says, you know, 25 or 25 grand. I forgot what it was, but it was just like, we didn't care. We were living in the moment. That wasn't going to slow us down if they needed to dock us. We looked at it as if y'all need to dock us 25 points to keep the points race good, go ahead, because we're going to win more. The whole attitude of the team at that time was, beat me, you know. We were in that momentum, like that was a track to where, like, we're it.
While that was the case for the team, MRN's Dave Moody shared his concern on how the penalty could mar the rest of the chase.
My first thought was, please, God, don't let this be the difference in the championship. Don't let this be a Mark Martin carburetor spacer, you know, where they find him 25 points and he lost the championship by 21 or whatever it was. It was like, please don't let something that has nothing to do with what happened on the racetrack, don't let that decide our championship.
If it wasn't clear before, it was clear now to everyone in the Nextel Cup Series garage what would and what would not be tolerated over the air. Just for good measure, Helton reminded each of the drivers and teams the following week at Kansas.
And then I think if you were there, you remember, I think our next race was Kansas City. And we had all the drivers and I said, as I told you, I said, I got the list. I carry it in my pocket. You want to see it? I'll make you a copy of it. But if it's on that list, you now know what we're going to do. I said, Dale Jr. set the precedent for the rest of you.
Next week on Episode 8, our journey through 2004 continues with a day at Martinsville that will forever live in the hearts and minds of all who were involved in NASCAR.
I don't think any of the teams up and down pit road with Hendrick or any other race team knew. And Jimmy won the race, and it looked like he was going to win the race. And I told Jim, I said, be out there when the checkered flag falls. Walk up to Jimmy and immediately take him to the hauler and explain what went on with his other drivers, the other drivers of Hendrick and the crew chiefs. And if you remember, at the end of the race, there was no victory lane. We didn't inspect the car. We took it and locked it up, and everybody kind of, that, but then at that point, the news was pretty well publicized as soon as the race was over. And it just, everybody just, another one of those moments you leave, you know, scratching your head, wondering why.
Until then, I'm Mike Bagley. For all of us here at the Motor Racing Network, thank you for joining us on NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History.
Outdoor care to home and auto repair. Do it with Craftsman. Find the tools, equipment, and storage you need at your local Lowe's, Ace Hardware, or Craftsman.com.